Welcome. This is Ask an Atheist, 844 Skeptic, 844-753-7842. That's our voicemail nationwide. My name is Sam, and with me today is Wes.
Hello.
And joining us for the first time in the studio is Luke Clue. How are you?
Doing fine, you?
Fantastic. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I help run Kids Up Atheists and Agnostics over in the Kids Up area. Usually we run things out of Bremerton.
Mm-hmm.
I also sort of work on the apprenticeship program over that area, and I follow the local music scene.
Oh, very good. So what's going on with Kids Up Atheists these days?
We just still do our regular meetings. It's winter. Things are kind of down. Should start doing the trail cleanup again in March next month.
Trail cleanup.
Yes. We have a segment of the trail in the Clear Creek Trail in Silverdale.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably about 200 yards long. It's not huge, but we maintain the trail, keep the grass down.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Have picnics nice. In the summer.
And, yeah, I mean, you know, Wes, you've been involved with Kitsap for a while, even though you're nominally down here in Tacoma now.
Yeah, I'm pretty much a Tacoma boy now. But yeah, yeah,
You're a whole supermarket.
Aw. Yeah, but at least we got good beer.
Yeah, we have some of that here. Or Kitsap.
Yeah. But me, Luke, we pretty much started, you know, helped found the Kitsap Atheist groups mm-hmm. way back in the day before there was a need.
I think you showed up there. I showed up two years after you.
Yeah.
About 2 years.
But I mean, still, that's been like 5-6 years.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I've been involved for a while.
Forever. Wow. That kind of feels weird to say that.
It does.
Well, while we're talking about Old Home Week, we actually have an update from Rick from Elma, who we haven't heard from in some time, but he was a regular contributor to the show about a year back. And, you know, we kind of wondered what he was up to. Turns out he was up to quite a bit. So let's hear from him.
Hi, this is Rick from Elma. I work at a prison in Aberdeen, and they recently started an atheist prison coalition group, and I'm now volunteering. Before, when I attended the meetup, it was trying to get started. Fast forward a year, and we're holding meetings. They created like a leadership within the group, so we can facilitate the meetings. The groups meet on Friday. We're having really productive discussions. The format is still evolving on what we talk about, but we've had discussions about evolution, the Big Bang, all of the, like, the key talking points, irreducible complexity, how to talk to religious people. Just, it runs the gambit. It's really fascinating. I try to bring in current articles that are atheist related. It's really nice. I am the sole volunteer right now. I've talked to a couple of staff members who have interest, but we don't have anybody else who can come in and volunteer there. But I'm hoping that we can get some people to do that. If there's anybody in the Grays Harbor area and they are okay with going into a prison setting, I would love to have another volunteer to go in there when I am unable to. But I just wanted to give you an update on there. I know that I sent an email before outlining what I was trying to do, and that group is now up and running. The Atheist Prisoner Coalition group is there, and hopefully we'll stay around a while. So thanks very much for your help, and have a good one.
So Rick had been talking about that for a while, and it's good to hear that he's got it started up, but sounds like he needs some help.
Yeah, if there's any speakers from, you know, Seattle, Olympia, Aberdeen, all the way down to Portland, you know, if you're willing to spend some time down there, sounds like it'd be really, he would really love that.
Yeah, so you can go to atheist.radio, you can contact him, care of this show, and we'll make sure we'll get that information to him. So it's good to hear updates like that, and it's interesting. I think this is especially important because religions tend to run the prison systems here in the United States. In fact, a lot of judges, even judges who you might not expect otherwise, will look favorably on a prisoner who has had a religious conversion in the midst of the prison system, under the false belief that a religious conversion reduces recidivism, which is not proven by any study I've seen, but maybe, and I would be pretty skeptical of a study that would say so.
Well, look at NA and AA.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got situations where it's this weird, it's a bit like NPR ecumenicalism, where they don't really care what your religion is, just as long as you've got one, and that somehow... and the giving up of authority, the giving up of personal responsibility to somebody else is supposed to somehow make you a more responsible person. And I've never I'm not like a lot of people in this room. I was not a religious person at any point. Maybe you can fill me in on this, but I've never understood how giving up personal responsibility leads to personal responsibility. I've never been real clear on that.
Well, I mean, it works really well for those, you know, 7-step programs. You know,
Well, okay.
This is me chuckling.
You're being sarcastic.
I am totally, yeah. Totally give it up to God, and then somehow that makes you a better person. I've never, I mean, that's Underwear Gnome's level of incredulity. I just can't get from 1 step to
Underwear Gnome's in that there are missing pieces, and...
Yeah, there are. Like, get underwear... something profits.
Ah, got it. Okay.
Yeah. I was raised Lutheran, so, you know, stoicism and working hard for success.
There were Lutheran components of my family, and whenever I had to interface with churches, it was Lutheran, and yeah, stoicism, which didn't seem much like giving anything up. It was more of a you kind of had to own it kind of deal. And I don't know how this works. This is a place where I am woefully unschooled. But, given the success rates of 12-step programs, I suspect my unschooledness in this situation might not harm me. So we've got some other feedback. We've got Rex from the Philippines, who writes, I grew up in a Catholic family and was surrounded by religious friends and elders. Now I'm an agnostic, but looking forward to being a Gnostic atheist. How did you convert to atheism? Well, we can go around. Well, first things first. Gnostic atheist, that's not something I've heard. I've heard people say it, but I've never been real clear on the definition.
That is something my brother follows. It's sort of a, you know, we can't disprove it completely, so I'm just going to go with probably not.
That seems like agnosticism, though.
It's like a step towards atheism from agnosticism.
Okay.
So it's a really fine subset.
I would go so far as to say it's an invalid subset. It doesn't make any sense. In that Gnostic, the whole concept, the whole phrase Gnostic is knowledge of the supernatural world, and the very definition posits the existence of a supernatural world. So if you're a Gnostic atheist, you have positive knowledge of a world that you believe in that doesn't. It seems like a self-refuting comment, which are my favorite things ever. Self-refuting statements are amazing, but this sort of feels that way. Any thoughts?
I don't really follow it myself.
Okay.
But he's a really cool guy, so... Eh.
So, shortly, so what's our, sort of our quick elevator speech for how we got to atheism, I guess, Wes?
My family, we used to be Southern Baptists, and, you know, some really bad stuff happened to my family, and it kind of made me question what was going on in the church, because they were not nice to my family. So I started reading the, you know, I'm going to say I was around 6 years old to nine, starting about nine, I started actually reading the Bible. I'm not going to say I understood it all, but, you know, about the time 13 rolled around, I started calling myself an atheist once I found out that there were other people that didn't believe. It's really because of the people that were in the church that were just not doing what they said, what they preached. So, yeah, it was kind of sad for me to have that happen to me so young.
And look, we haven't heard from you before. So
I was raised Lutheran. Comes from my mom's side of the family. My Germanic ancestors that moved to the United States many, many years ago.
Sure.
So I was raised Lutheran, then, and my father's side is Presbyterian, I believe. Not exactly sure, but there were two pastors over there. My uncle used to be a chaplain for the Tooele Fire Department until he moved in October, and my grandfather, who passed away last February, he was a pastor for a small church for a while, too.
Mm-hmm.
Me personally, I kind of stopped being involved with church after one of the members of the congregation ripped into my mom, accusing her of trying to steal her husband while my mom was going through divorce. And then I just kind of slipped away. I mean, I never got further than the genealogy in the Bible myself.
Okay.
And then little bits and pieces to argue things. From there, I moved on to, I moved in with a friend who listened to the Atheist Guy podcast a lot.
Sure.
Way back when. I don't know if you remember those.
I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah. He was one of those guys that was on the Wife Swap show a while back that never aired. Yeah, he was that guy. That was an interesting show if you can get a hold of it, but yeah. Watched that, and finally I went from religious to agnostic, and then from agnostic slipped to full-on atheist.
Very cool.
It's just a process for me. It just didn't make sense.
So there are some examples, but I would not. So, like I said, I'm not really familiar with the phrase Gnostic atheist. I've concerned. So on the show, we've said repeatedly that we're epistemological agnostics. Is that as far from a knowledge perspective, we're agnostics. There's no evidence for or against the existence of any supernatural world. Actually, there's some evidence against the supernatural world, but there's no evidence for or against a creator of the world. There's no evidence for God, as far as I've been able to tell, and there's no evidence against God. Really, it's such a nebulous concept that it's hard to approach. And there is also the hard to prove a negative thing going on there as well.
I always call myself an atheist and agnostic because I have no knowledge or belief in a God.
But from a behavior perspective, we're atheists because in the absence of any clear evidence about whether or not a God exists, we choose to act as if there isn't one.
Right. When the question ever comes up, I always say I'm an atheist.
Right. Right. And, you know, that seems like there's not a whole lot of there. And that's absolutely true. Of any aspect of my personality, I would say it's my atheism that says the least about me. The only reason I've taken to the airwaves for these past 8 years to talk about it is because of the way that we're treated. It's less about how important atheism is to my life and more about how this very, very small aspect of my life makes me a social pariah, even within the United States. If you want a concept of what I actually believe, this is where we start talking about humanism. And you know, like as far as Ask an Atheist goes, we've always stuck to what I've called the two-word definition of atheism: no God. Everything else is window dressing. Everything else is additional data or additional belief systems that you're adding on to the atheist concept. You know, and so when you want to know what I do believe in, I talk about humanism, and that's, you know, humans solve human problems. We've got no higher authority to go back to, specifically secular humanism as defined in the, you know, as you can see in the what do they call it? The Humanist Manifesto, even though I'm not a huge fan of manifestos as a group.
They tend to get a bad rap. Manifestos.
Ooh. Well, a lot of people seem to like writing manifestos because you find a lot of them online. And manifesto doesn't necessarily mean communist manifesto. It's not. That's a, you know, there's also, that guy, the Unabomber Manifesto. He wrote a manifesto. There's this guy in.
That one was interesting.
Yeah. There's this guy in you know, Phoenix who brought a gun to a TV station and had them read his manifestos. But you also got manifestos like How to Do a Good Podcast is one I read this week, and that was specifically categorized as a manifesto, which I thought was weird, but I got the idea, even though, and I think I only agreed with about 30% of it, I think, at the end of it.
I think you're only allowed to agree with 30% of any manifesto.
So we have another email. This is Ron from Tacoma who writes, "Is yours the only original program on KTQA?" Ooh. Thanks for the email, Ron. Not really, I guess. KTQA is a radio station that right now it's in a little bit of a holding pattern. We do have several radio shows on the, or we do have several shows on the radio station that are here in Tacoma, but we're also making some fairly large changes to it. We're going to be relaunching it. Some of the stuff that you're hearing now will continue. Some of the other stuff. Like, for example, right now I've been spending most of the last few months looking for a permanent home for KTQA. And that problem is solved. And now, you know, well, it's not solved. I mean, we have a solution to the problem. Now what remains is to actually commit to that solution, which is what I'm doing right now. And so if you're within KTQA LP 95.3 megahertz in central Tacoma on the FM dial, if you're within range of that, you can tune it up and you'll probably be hearing more interesting and more things as time goes on. So one more email. Matt from Facebook writes, do Autobots need life or car insurance?
Yes.
Yeah, that's my guess. Luke, any you want to throw down on this one? Trial by fire. Come on, man. Come on. Come on.
Potentially both. Depends on whether or not they're in car form or like human form.
Okay, so if they're operating on the roads and on the roads of the United
then
States,
then they need automobile insurance. Then they need,
right. Sure.
But okay. If they're walking around, they need life insurance.
Okay.
And they should always have life insurance. But if they're going to be driving, they need to have automotive insurance.
That seems kind of...
I kind of fall in that camp, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you always need life insurance. You have to protect your assets and
right.
your estate. Children.
Well, my life insurance doesn't protect my assets. It protects...
Well, my estate. My
right.
Estate.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that seems like a bad idea. This is Ask an Atheist, 844 Skeptic, 844-753-7842. I'm going to stop concerning myself with invisible beings that don't exist or whatever. And after the break, we'll have some best words for you.
Billy, I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. On Sunday, February 28th, at the University of Washington's Burke Museum, Seattle Atheists is sponsoring a special Darwin Day event from noon to 2 p.m. with snacks, crafts, professional speakers, and activities for kids. Celebrate the genius of Charles Darwin by meeting scientists, educators, and game designers at this free event. Free tickets give you access to the Burke Museum from 10 to 5, which is hosting additional crafts and activities. Check our show notes at atheist.radio for links, or search Facebook for Seattle Atheists. Always fun. Darwin Day, usually a pretty pretty fun event. It's one of the, I think it's one of Seattle Atheist tentpole events. They're doing it a little differently this year. They're doing it at the Burke Museum, which is not something I've seen them do before. So this could be really cool.
Awesome. Good for them.
Never actually been to that museum.
I've never been either, but I've worked with some material from the Burke Museum for Camp Quest Northwest.
Oh, nice.
And
I used to walk by it every day to my car.
Oh.
The parking lot was right there.
That's, but you never decided to go in? Is that?
Well, you know, I was rushing to class or rushing to my car.
Oh,
home.
Fair enough. So yeah, you heard the music. It's best words time. We've got some kind of a doozy this week. Donald Trump has ordered Pentagon officials to hold a military parade similar to what he witnessed in France's Bastille Day ceremonies last July. Although Trump had told reporters in September that he'd like to see a celebration on July 4th down Pennsylvania Avenue, the timing and location of the event has yet to be worked out. Washington, D.C. may not be a feasible choice, according to the Pentagon. Opposition to the idea came from a number of lauded military and former military individuals, including one of the Navy SEALs who captured bin Laden. Retired U.S. Army Major General Paul Eaton called the parade an example of Trump's worrisome authoritarian tendencies.
I don't see anything good about this.
Nothing at all.
From wasting money to wasting time to pumping up his ego. Goodness.
And infrastructure damage.
Come on. As far as things that I would concern myself with...
It's minor.
Road wear is fairly down on the...
Tanks on the road.
Sure. Yeah. No, I get it, but that's kind of down there.
Oh.
No. Personally, I kind of wonder at this. It speaks to a lot of problems that are already extant within the within the Trump White House, I think. You know, it speaks to his desire to inflate his own ego, to have like the glitz and the glamour of the office of the President of the United States without ever actually having to commit to any responsibilities of that office. I think, you know, I think it speaks to the militarism, his desire to have generals in every everywhere he can, how he likes to have the you know, the military stuff happening all around him.
I can only imagine that he's going to come up there in a third world sort of uniform with a whole breast full of medals and stuff like this. This is going to be glorious.
For some reason, it reminds me of a Looney Tunes cartoon.
Which one?
Something with Bugs Bunny in a giant general uniform with ribbons all over it, just standing up
there. With the giant epaulettes.
Yeah, with the giant epaulettes.
Is it one of those? Is it one of those World War II cartoons that you just don't? You're not allowed to see anymore.
Yeah,
because,
it's one of those, probably.
Oh, no,
it's a little bit insensitive.
The 1980s.
Oh, 1980s. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Well,
that's when I grew up, so I saw those before.
But I don't think it was made in the 1980s.
No.
Okay, right.
It was definitely from the 1940s.
But all that said, is this really a thing? Like, is this just not what one would expect from an authoritarian, visually infantile presidency? But does this actually create any problems in itself other than road damage?
I honestly expected this. Once I heard of him wanting it, I was like, oh yeah, this is something he would want to have happen.
Sure.
Should it happen? No, of course not.
Didn't he want fighter jets to fly over his inauguration?
Yeah, he did. He did want fighter jets.
Want that.
Yeah, and so I think at that point, since he wasn't president, the Joint Chiefs just kind of said no.
Right.
Yeah. Which is a great way to start your new job. but really, is this merely the effects of the disease, or is this the disease itself?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That one hit over my head on that one.
I mean, I think this is incredibly instructive, because this is something that previously every conservative I knew would have been very against, because other than France, and France does this because historical weirdness reasons, this is mostly out of the Little Red Playbook. This is something that the Soviet Union would do. This is something that North Korea does. This is something that China does. And it's normally designed to inflate the sense of the efficacy and the power of the military, which is fine, you know, which kind of makes sense when you have these militaristic nations who are not at the top of the tree as far as as military efficacy goes, which hasn't been where the United States has been since the turn of the 20th century.
It's kind of a hallmark of authoritarianism.
It is a hallmark of authoritarianism. Yeah. To me, it's a clear indicator of authoritarianism. And I'm, don't get me wrong, I'm against this. But does this, my question is, mostly for, I'll be honest with you, educational and historical collection reasons, is this the thing that leads to mass arrests? Or is this the thing that suggests that mass arrests are possible? That's kind of what I'm saying. That's what I mean. Is this a symptom, or is it the disease, or is it the phlegm that's left over when you cough, when you have the disease?
I don't think it points out to mass arrests necessarily.
Okay.
Not at this point.
Sure.
We'd have other things.
I'm being a little melodramatic. Yeah. I'll totally admit to that. But when we're speaking in terms of, when we talk about the language of authoritarianism inside the United States, or rather just the language of authoritarianism full stop, There's generally a progression. You saw that progression in Southeast Asia. You saw that progression in Europe, and you know, leading up to World War II. You saw that progression in South America during, you know, the apex of the Monroe Doctrine. And it takes a very clear sort of, you know, ballistic path, of which military parades appear to be one. I don't know if this is something I should fight, or if this is something that I should note while paying attention to something else.
There's still a lot of pushback for this kind of thing. When we stop seeing pushback in the military and they're like, let's go do this, this is awesome, that's when we need to worry.
Okay, fair.
but I still kind of think that you should be on the watch for more arrests, more people to you know, be getting in trouble because of.
Well, that's always
That's always something we should be watching for.
Yeah, that. I mean, that was something I was paying attention to even before he came into office, because I was, you know, during the time of my most of my adult life that I've now begun to thought of as a little bit of the madness, where it's just like, oh, geez, I thought I was done with this. But what I really love about this is a little bit of, we've talked about this a little bit, is any other if this is what I don't what I understand intellectually about people, but have a real hard time believing about people, is if Obama were to ask for a military parade, can you imagine the kind of stuff that we would be hearing from the media right now? Imagine, you know, you talked about the Bundys in the pre-show. Can you imagine they would be on Fox News 8 hours a day, just decrying President Obama, talking about how he is the harbinger of the New World Order, and that we're all going to end up in FEMA camps used as, you know, rocket fuel to send the plutocrats to Jupiter. I mean, that's where this would go. And that's but the thing is part of it is but it's their guy taking a page out of the Little Red Playbook rather than Obama. And so everybody's cool with it, and it's just showing support for the before the troops by waving around the anatomy of the military industrial complex.
Oh my. Even if God of the Republicans, Ronald Reagan, had done this back in the 80s, nobody would be in favor of this either.
Yeah.
Well, I'm pretty sure that Fox News has become the propaganda arm of the Republican Party, especially the Trump
side. Become?
It has been for a while.
Right.
But it's gone to such a point now that I can't even fathom people believing this as a valid news source. But like 30-40% of the population do use it as their primary source of media.
Right. And that's just the thing, is like I have trouble emotionally interfacing with this. The idea that they would literally see it in apocalyptic terms if any Democrat were to ever ask for a military parade, but it's their Cheeto, so it's okay. This kind of thinking, it bothers me.
It's a problem on either side. When it's my guy, it's okay. When it's their guy, it's not okay.
Well, that's exactly
it's,
that.
It's both sides do this, unfortunately, but right now we're dealing with
I've never seen a Democrat ask for lifetime.
Not a military parade, no.
Yeah, right.
I'm talking about things like presidential power and stuff that increased under Obama. When it's Obama getting it, who I liked, by the way.
Right.
Democrats didn't complain.
I haven't.
But Republicans...
opinion.
I was a fairly big fan.
Okay.
But when Democrats didn't complain about that, but Republicans were all up in arms. Now Trump's trying to get more power, and Republicans are like, woo!
Yeah.
And, you know,
and
we're scared.
I mean, it's a really clear example of religious ideological principles as applied to felt politic. But I get it. I understand it intellectually, but to see it, it's like, cannot you not see these things? These are very basic ideas. I don't know. I'm just not good at this.
It's hard to see it when you are living it sometimes.
Right. Donald Trump has ordered Pentagon officials to hold a military... Oh, wait, no, I just read that. Ha ha. Trump appealed to Christian nationalists during his speech this week at the National Prayer Breakfast in Washington, D.C. In an uncharacteristically on-script message celebrating God and country, Trump proclaimed that America is a nation of believers where faith is paramount to life and liberty. He cited the Founding Fathers, who invoked our Creator four times in the Declaration of Independence, and noted that our currency declares "In God We Trust." He lauded the heroism of ordinary Americans who responded to national disasters and shootings. He vowed the United States would remain a tireless force of justice and peace. And most importantly, oh right, okay, I'll skip that. So thanks, Mr. President. No, seriously, this is, as far as I'm concerned, this is another nail in the coffin of ceremonial deism. Is when you've got the President of the United States saying that the motto "on our money" is an example of why Christian nationalism, establishing the United States as a Christian nation, when he's got that, that really puts a lie to the Supreme Court concept that this deism, or deism that they have, we have in the United States, where the Bible is allowed preferential treatment, and where "In God We Trust" is considered not a statement of sectarianism. This puts the lie to that. This makes that this is clearly invalid. Now, it may be a while before we get a hearing on that, given the current stack in the Supreme Court. But I definitely think, I definitely think that when the time comes to have this case, when we have all of our evidence, and it's time to shove all of that evidence down the throats of the people who would like to see the First Amendment replaced with the Ten Commandments, this will be near the top of the list.
Well, I just love that, paper money got "In God We Trust" when our country was founded back in 1954, five, somewhere in there.
Six.
Yeah.
1958.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Still, very long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
This, to those people, this is the reality they see.
Mm-hmm.
It's their world.
Yeah.
So, and we're trying to take that away from them, and this is their godly country, and we're ruining that.
Yeah. I mean, they're in power, they're capable of making damage, of adding damage, but eventually things will change, and we'll have the opportunity to work on this stuff. And this is the evidence we're going to see. I mean, this is the very, very, very slight, the four or five silver molecules in the storm cloud, I guess is the way I would put it.
Well, I mean, the tornado that is Trump is helping shoot him and his followers in the foot. So this is lovely.
Mm.
I think in the elections in November, we'll see how that's going to go.
We can sure hope.
We can hope.
A televangelist who sits on Donald Trump's evangelical advisory board has told her faithful followers to avoid flu shots this winter and instead inoculate themselves with the word of God. Gloria Copeland posted a video to her Facebook account that urged anyone afraid of contracting the virus to repeat, "I'll never have the flu." The Texas megachurch that Copeland runs with her husband, Pastor Kevin Copeland, was the epicenter of a 2003 measles outbreak. The Copelands have urged against conventional medicine, including routine prescriptions and cancer treatments, as well as vaccinations. This winter's flu is responsible for more hospitalizations in nearly a decade and has caused the deaths of at least 63 children nationwide.
Goodness. Well, I'm assuming that they didn't learn to say "I'll never have the measles" back in 2013.
No, that's precisely what they were doing. We covered this church specifically in 2013 when they had this measles outbreak. It was this, because it was this measles was on track for going away. And then the anti-vaccination campaign started biting in. And then we started having measles outbreak here in the Pacific Northwest region, where we have, or at least had, some of the most lax vaccination requirements of every state in the union, purely for hippy-dippy reasons. And then you've got churches like this who believe, basically who are doing the whole Christian Science thing all over again, who believe that prayer can get rid of disease without any medical attention whatsoever. And suddenly, you've got a megachurch in Texas with an enormous measles outbreak. Surprise!
Then we have children dying in Canada and Idaho, Montana.
Would you like to hear what she had to say about this?
Of course.
Mm. Yes, please.
Yeah, pretty good.
Listen, partners, we don't have a flu season. We've got a duck season, a deer season, but we don't have a flu season. And don't receive it when somebody threatens you with "everybody's getting the flu." We've already had our shot. He bore our sicknesses and carried our diseases. That's what we stand on. And by his stripes, we were healed. If you've already got the flu, I'm going to pray for you right now. Jesus himself gave us the flu shot. He redeemed us from the curse of flu. And we receive it and we take it, and we are healed by his stripes. Amen. You know, the Bible says he himself bore our sicknesses and carried our diseases. And by his stripes, we were healed. When we were healed, we are healed. So get on the word, stay on the word. And if you say, "Well, I don't have any symptoms of the flu." Well, great. That's the way it's supposed to be. Just keep saying that. "I'll never have the flu. I'll never have the flu." Put words. Inoculate yourself with the word of God.
What are stripes?
I believe they're referring to beatings, lashings.
Ah, that makes
sense. Oh, is that what they're referring to? That's
what they were referred to in my childhood.
I thought they were referring to the fact that Jesus might in fact be a sergeant, which is something I would completely believe.
Or a zebra.
Or a zebra. From, well, not zebra. That's, no. that's a very different Christian church.
Yeah, that's what we called them when I would get a beating.
Oh, okay.
With leather belt, yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Stripes, yeah. Hiding, yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah. Anyways, moving on along. Goodness.
Well, so part of me, you know, going on from what I said about the military parade, that a case can be made that presidents have always worked with televangelists or evangelists like this. The ever since Jimmy Carter, you've always had people like this in the White House who have a very charismatic approach to, in any way you choose to use the word charismatic, approach to religion, and they've used it as a method of control within the government. I can make that case, but normally, under normal circumstances, this is a situation where the White House generally uses a little bit of, they're very careful about who they'll choose. Like, you normally won't see presidential advisor or, you know, Christian advisor to the president, Peter Popoff. But I completely believe that this is possible in the Trump White House. And this is an example of this. I don't know that, that using a medicine disbelieving, basically anti-vaccination, Christian charismatic preacher, with, you know, the down homey Texas, blah, 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 we have hunting seasons, not disease seasons, holy cats. I don't know that I've seen that in my past. I might be wrong about that, but this does appear to be unique to me.
I mean, Trump's record on what he thinks on vaccinations is questionable at best. So, I mean, he's not.
Oh, right. He himself is anti-vax.
He is an anti-vaxxer.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. And so it makes sense that. And it's not that she's running the CDC. However, that wouldn't surprise me in this context.
Maybe not yet.
Actually, not the CDC. She, like, in order for her to fit within the Trump White House, within the Trump federal government, she would have to be in charge of something that she ultimately does not care about, but is there precisely for the power. So she would be in charge of the, you know, she'd be head chef of the White House, I guess, or something like that. Or in a Department of the Interior.
Or after Ajit Pai leaves.
Yeah, because that's happening. Now he's a darling. Come on, man. you know, where they're given jobs where they ultimately don't care about it. But it's a path to power. So I'm not saying that's unique to Trump, but I've never seen it done so transparently.
Is it just a path to power or a path to the destruction of that particular administration? I mean, you put the guy that wanted to destroy the Department of Energy in charge of the Department of Energy. You put Davos in charge of the Department of Education.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Well, there's a funny thing there in that in order to really take down an infrastructure in the way that they want to take it down, you need somebody in charge of it in order to do destructive things. But the way they're doing it, they're just not bringing people in. And as a result, it just insists and waits for the next administration. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We go to the break, and when we come back, we'll be talking about, I don't know, space and rockets, I guess. I don't know, we're good at that, right?
Has Ngarwe Trust invaded your town? Are you tired of government officials who want to plaster Ngarwe Trust on taxpayer-owned property? Are you afraid because your local sheriff placed an In God We Trust decal on the patrol cars? We are here to help. The original motto project is for those who feel the separation of church and state is an important issue and should be honored regardless of your belief or lack thereof. Theists, non-theists, and all free thinkers are welcome. We need your support to show politicians that diversity exists within our nation, and their promotion of a monotheistic religion and push for theocracy will not be tolerated. Stand up and be heard. Join us at originalmotto.us.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
I'm a mouth breather. This is Ask an Atheist. 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. I don't know why I did that. We were just talking about microphone skills in the break. Anyway, a man with a fervent belief in the flatness of the Earth has failed to yet again launch the homemade rocket he believes would provide solid proof that the Earth is not round. Self-taught rocketeer Mike Hughes attributed his launch failure to a problem with the vehicle's actuator. Wow, okay. He plans a possible future launch after court proceedings in which he is suing various elected officials and government branches for blocking his previous launch attempts. Mr. Hughes' failure to lift off came the very week that Elon Musk successfully launched a Tesla Roadster into space, overshooting a Mars orbit trajectory, and instead heading for the asteroid belt. I have a lot of thoughts about that. But let's talk about Captain Hughes here. Now, actuator, that could be a lot of things. That's like saying my widget is broken. What actuator? Do we know what actuator broke? Because the first actuator that occurs to me is the thing that makes it point up. Like that, like the thing that makes it tumescent. I
do believe his is set on a sled anyway, so yeah. It's already on a ramp to, so there's no
actuator. So is there like an actuator to get it pointed in the right direction? Because he's going to need some sort of guidance. But I just like the idea he can't even get the rocket not pointed at the ground.
I bet it was like a firing actuator or something.
Okay, all right.
So something for the main thrust to exit the vehicle.
Just go to a hobby store and get some... Well, no, that's not how he's doing it. He's doing it like a 2-liter bottle rocket, I think. He's using pressure, I think.
Yeah, yeah. It's a giant pressure vessel.
Yeah, and he's using this is my favorite part. He's using a modified RV as a feeder pressure vessel to his rocket. Which just strikes me as the safest thing ever done by God or man.
So there's like a tank?
I don't think so. The way it's described, it's just like he did some extra welding to an RV and then pumped it up to like 135 PSI.
So you're talking like 2x3s and aluminum siding?
Yeah, pretty much.
And some windows that are designed to push out in case of emergency.
One would assume...
It just lots of liquid nails.
Yeah, one would assume that he did something to the windows or removed them. But it's that kind of rocket. It's the kind of rocket like, man. So like, there's this one service station back home in Palatine. It's not in Palatine. I think it's in Arlington Heights, right on Northwest Highway. And it's got a rocket on top of it. And then the rocket's clearly made out of like 50-gallon drums and stuff like that. It's not designed to go into space. It's designed to look like a rocket on top of a gas station, and it works really well for that purpose. I haven't seen it in 20 years, but here I am talking about it right now. But it sounds like this Mike Hughes guy is trying to go into space on that rocket. Where's he going? He's going 52 miles up. That's his plan.
That's his target.
That's his goal.
I think this one's supposed to go only about 1,000 feet.
Okay, this one is only supposed to go... Yeah, because he wants to do this proof of concept. It right. only goes 1,800 right. feet in the air. And when he doesn't die from that, which is not something I would put money on.
He almost died from the first one.
Right. And that only went like 100 feet in the air.
Not very far.
Yeah.
But the acceleration forces with his like steam powered pressure vessel are insane.
Yeah. Well, you like to make, Wes, you like to make some hay about his former occupations.
Well, I mean, yeah, sure. He started off as a limo driver. You mentioned that he was doing stunt work a lot, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, hey, I'm not going to knock him for that, but...
yeah, it is
maybe rocketry's not his forte.
It is a strange career path to limo driver, stuntman, to astronautical engineer,
yeah.
I think.
Just a bit.
It's a bit strange.
So... Is he doing this because he wants to go into space and prove himself, or is he trying to get more money so he can launch more rockets?
Yes.
I think ultimately is he wants to do more stuff like this, but I think this is the process by which he becomes famous and wealthy, is I think where this goes.
And so he can retire.
To the point where him launching Ersatz rockets into space actually predates his interest in flat Earth theory.
By quite a bit, from what I understand.
Yeah. And so I'm thinking... because the way we heard about this is a story we've covered before, and the way we covered it before was he had a, what do you call it, when you steal money from people
like a pyramid scheme.
No, a Kickstarter.
Yes, I saw that.
We had a Kickstarter, and it's like he wanted to prove that the Earth was flat, so he did this, and then a guy with a Patreon shouldn't be that I don't know. I always questioned whether or not the flat Earth thing was just a way to get a new audience for his really complex suicide.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
And whether or not he was actually that interested in the flat Earth concept.
You know, they recently had their first annual or their inaugural flat Earth convention.
They did?
Yes.
Where was it?
Oh, and somewhere in the south, like
the South Pole.
No, the south of the United States. The south of the United States.
Well, of course it's gonna be in the United States. So I don't know, is it invalid of me to question this guy's actual philosophy versus, because I mean, honestly, I think this guy's philosophy is I want to ride a pneumatic rocket 50 miles into the air. I think that's what he wants, and if it was that alone,
that's glorious.
That's awesome.
Great job. Yeah, keep on doing that. But instead, because I, you know, I that's not really a huge market for suicide in this world. So so he has to find a group of people. He has to find a market. He has to market this rocket launch, and
he has to find people that'll give him money.
Right, and so he goes. You know, maybe these flat earthers will do it, and then he buys into it.
Well, that's why he has research flat Earth on the side of his rocket.
Oh, is it actually?
It's actually there.
So I guess my question is he being honest?
Did he drink the Kool-Aid? I don't think so. I think he's just doing it just for, you know, support, monetary support.
This is all conjecture.
Totally.
Yeah.
I know plenty of people that went from totally sane, logical people to flat Earth.
Wow.
Really?
I do.
How does that look? Like, what is, so you're at a live show, knocking back some beers, and then like a chemtrail happens, and then now they're flat earthers, or what? Like, what?
So for one of them, longtime friend, grew up with a guy, and then he found extreme religion.
Okay.
Like extreme, like way out there stuff.
Fair.
And apparently there's some biblical references to a flat earth and the four corners of the earth.
The firmament, yeah. And that sort of thing.
So there's those types who are like, you know, there's a celestial dome and a flat earth surrounded by the ice around the South Pole.
Right.
And then there's the conspiracy theorists ones that are like, there's a flat earth, maybe there's a celestial dome, maybe there isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them say that nuclear weapons were an attempt to crack the firmament so we could escape. Or something along those lines.
I'm sorry, if we had a glass dome ceiling in the atmosphere, the last thing I would do is try to crack it with a nuke. That's not really on my
list. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. I have other people that I know that don't believe nuclear weapons even exist and that they're just a giant.
Why?
Oh, yeah. No, I follow a lot of people. I know a lot of people that are into some weird conspiracy theories. They're interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally implausible, but they would make some great stories.
Well, I very rarely meet, I collect these people online.
I do too.
Yeah, but I very rarely see them in person these days. But you have a...
No, there's a guy that...
you have a dealer.
I have a few. So there's one guy that's a conspiracy theorist. He just recently got into flat earth, but he's like...
Okay.
He's a chemtrail, anti-vaxxer, government's controlling our minds kind of guy.
Right.
Then I got the super religious guy. I haven't talked to him in a little while,
mm-hmm.
because it's hard to.
I can imagine. Yeah.
And then I have another guy that I go to picnics with occasionally who doesn't believe in modern physics or that nuclear weapons are a thing and that the moon landing was faked,
mm-hmm.
and all rockets are really just made up fake science that is there just for publicity or funneling money from one place to another. It's basically CIA... ops, psyops.
Yeah. That doesn't stand up at all. That's the thing, is like they're using NASA as a way to get money, because NASA
takes in like 1% of the budget.
Less than 1% at this point.
Yeah.
Whereas the military space program, is actually larger than NASA.
Right. I find all these conspiracy theories just incredibly interesting.
I will admit that I find the I find the conspiracy theory flat earthers, the one who believes, the people who believes that there's a reason, there's some sort of reason to make us believe that the, you know, the sphere is a sphere, versus people who read it in a Bronze Age book or collection of...
Is it the lizard people?
Some of it, I have met those people. The Beta Reticulans and all that stuff. Those are my favorites. That's the David Icke crowd, which I always find. Like, I actually, he had it released, a year ago. No, a few years ago now, like an 8-hour video on YouTube. I've watched the whole thing.
Ooh,
and it's just,
I don't have that kind of patience.
Oh, man.
Glutton for punishment.
I did other stuff.
Okay.
You know, I did a cycle of server upgrades while I was doing that. But so. Elon Musk, we haven't mentioned it yet, but this is if you're listening in the archive, this is the week that Elon Musk basically egoed the atmosphere and shot his own car into space with a guy on it, and he missed his target, and I'm supposed to think of this as a success. This guy plays with the Falcon Heavy like I do when I'm drunk and I'm playing Kerbal Space Program. The first time I played Kerbal Space Program, I had this like 9% Polish beer that I can get from, from around here that if I, you know, so I'm just kind of like, I'm going to launch rockets into space. And the first time I played it, I assumed that Earth had, or that Kerbal, the planet in the game, had a similar, similar escape velocity to Earth.
Oh,
no.
And it doesn't. Okay. So I built this rocket that took me, it's like, oh, I'm going to aim for the moon. And boom, and I missed the moon and left the solar system. Because the solar system has about as much escape velocity as the Earth actually does.
It's actually really hard to get off the surface of the Earth.
It is. Like, it's
really,
quite hard.
Really difficult.
Yeah. So granted there, if you get out of, I understand that, I joke a little bit when I'm like, so he missed and I'm supposed to see that as a victory. No, the fact that he made Earth escape velocity and is going to go a little farther than the asteroid belt, because he's not, as far as I understand from what I've read, he's not making it to the asteroid belt.
I thought there was supposed to be a very, egg-shaped elliptical, trajectory for
an elliptical
thing.
Orbit. Yeah,
he was going for a Mars transfer orbit.
He was going for a Mars transfer
and
orbit.
And he went a little bit farther than that. And it's going to like brush the asteroid belt or the.
Yeah, but then there was a so that was the last update that most people heard. But apparently, there's been like a third update, and it's going to go. It's going to blast through the. It's going to get kind of.
Oh wow,
that's actually kind of impressive.
Not really.
I mean,
what's the delta V from a? It's not that much.
True, it probably was like an extra 5 seconds of burn.
Yeah, not much to it. So it ends up being it's really a trajectory. It's an insertion fail at that point, and which just means his needs faster valves. I don't know what goes on there. I don't know these. I don't know these engines.
Well, still, I mean, there are a lot of companies that are starting to get interested in mining asteroids, and you know, something like this Falcon Heavy can definitely get there.
Yeah.
Now we just have to work on the return trip.
The investment in time is a big one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting. But then you also brought up Flat Earth just a moment ago. Now you have Elon Musk, and it still gives me a chuckle to think about that little interaction that they had a few months ago, talking about why no Flat Mars Society?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And Flat Earth Society replying back, "Hi, Elon. Thanks for the question. Unlike the Earth, Mars has been observed to be round. Hope you have a wonderful day."
I didn't get to see the launch, and I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, it was beautiful.
I watched
it live.
Yeah. You know what I want to see more than launch is the booster return.
Oh, that was amazing. But
yeah.
The whole time I was just like shaking with excitement. It was amazing. It was an incredible moment.
Yeah.
The booster returns, that's the impressive part to me. I mean, blowing stuff out into the atmosphere.
Yeah, and it apparently worked.
Awesome, but.
Two out of three.
Two so out of three. Okay.
The two side ones were tested. They'd already been flown before.
Right.
The middle one was modified.
Okay.
And they hadn't tested that one yet.
Yeah.
It hasn't gone up once before. And it had a engine failure on the way down and landed in the water at about 300 miles an hour.
All right. Well, all joking aside, I would really like to believe that this means something. Because just sometimes it seems that... I hope this works the way we want it to. This is Ask an Atheist. Thank you, Luke.
No problem.
Thank you, Wes.
Thank you.
Our website is atheist.radio. Our voicemail is 844-753-7842. You can email us at questions at askanatheist.tv or questions at atheist.radio. I'll get that figured out someday. See you guys next week.